This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Pre-recorded from Joe's mom's basement, welcome to another Greatest Hits episode of the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Griffin the intern, and I have good news and bad news. The bad news is for me. These guys leave the basement a mess when they take a week off. And who eats pork rinds anymore? Apparently Doug over by his mic, that's who, and maybe a bag an episode based on what it looks like around his chair. But the good news, this week we're bringing you five greatest hit shows that we think you're going to love. And man oh man, we start out with a great one. Gabe Karp is a guy who you may not have heard of, but all of us in Mom's Basement reference this episode on at least a weekly basis. Gabe was frustrated with those people who do the same idiotic stuff over and over again that drive you crazy. You know who I'm talking about. Well, today we're going to work on your mindset, because he's going to tell you what penguins have to do with these crazy workplace behaviors that make you want to poke your eye out. I know plenty of stackers who still talk about this episode. In fact, someone mentioned it on our Facebook group again just a couple of weeks ago, even though this episode originally aired back in June of 2022. Enjoy! I'll be back tomorrow to share another Greatest Hits episode. For now, you've got the episode, and I've got a date with a vacuum. Finn, turn out. Wait, no, that came out wrong!
It's a Monday, OG. Thank goodness we have a big, wide card table today, because I'm a little under the weather. Listen to this raspy. Huh?
Guys in my line of work, Joe, kill for that. Like, we try to swallow some grape nuts before we get on the mic.
To get the...
In a world.
Movie trailer for a big movie this weekend, which talks about our men and women in our armed forces, OG.
A lot of service member openings. And I wonder if there's going to be some increased signups, just like in Top Gun 1.
Like there was 30 years ago. Just amazing. And it just reminds me just what these people have on the line for us all the time when I watch a movie like Top Gun. I don't know, maybe we'll talk about that later. But for now, let's all raise our glasses, gentlemen, to the men and women in our armed forces, from those of us stacking Benjamins here in the basement and the team at Navy Federal Credit Union. Let's all go stack some Benjamins together, shall we?
Okay. Right here. It says right here in this account, we have $401,000.
Jackpot.
Nope. That says you have a 401k account. If you liquidate that right now, you'll have, you know, maybe $5,000.
So what happened to the other $396,000?
What is wrong with the two of you?
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and if you're feeling a little conflicted about your fellow humans, fret not. We all have a little trouble playing well with others. Luckily, we eliminated conflict forever here in the basement once I came up with this brand new idea called a suggestion box to help you fight nice and eliminate the pain and stress of toxic conflict. Today, we welcome the author of Don't Get Mad at Penguins, Gabe Karp. For our TikTok minute, we go to jail. And in our headlines, how does the economic slowdown hurt your credit? We'll ask the founder of Stellarfy, Lamine Zarad, for some credit building tips. Plus, we'll throw out the Haven Lifeline to Chris, who's wondering about where babies' accounts come from. And then I'll come in swinging with the fighting words of trivia. And now, two guys who have no conflict of interest when it comes to getting your Benjamin stacked, Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
And a happy Monday to you, stackers. Welcome back. You made it through your weekend, and now you're back to the bliss that is your work week. I'm Joe Salcihi, Average Joe Money on Twitter. And across the card table from me, way back away from the table because I'm not feeling that great, it's Mr. OG.
What's happening?
Man, woke up this morning. And of course, I finally go out in public and tested negative for the big C twice. However, I've got the same old convention croup, OG. You go out to a convention after 2 years of not going to much and all of a sudden bring it back home. It's just like old times. Remember pre-COVID when we got other things?
Trying to get a stronger immune system.
I know. I got to rebuild my immune system. So Doug's got the suggestion box. Doug, what a great idea, suggestion box. Nobody's thought of that before.
I mean, do you want me to explain how it works? I'm not sure. It's a new thing that came up into my brain.
It's pretty genius, but I think that little thing in the top there, we take a idea and we stick it in the top.
If you have an idea for how to improve things, but you're just a little bit apprehensive, maybe you're a little intimidated by your workplace and you don't want to say it out loud, you don't know how it's going to be received, you just put it on a piece of paper, you slip it right in there in the top, and it's like, hey, no blood, no foul.
Man, check out OG furiously writing right now. Just furiously writing. We got a great show today. We might have another way to talk about conflict. Gabe Karp is a guy that realized that conflict actually can be good. It can be absolutely horrible, but the right type of straightforwardness, we'll call it, can make organizations and your personal life much better. He learned this through experience. We're going to talk about his experience today and hopefully make it so we're all pretty conflicted at the end of today's show, but in a good way. Everybody's fighting, but we're all happy. We also are going to talk about credit and the market. What does a down market have to do with your credit? Good show. But before all that, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Well, if you're new to Stacking Benjamins, you may not know that I've tried out a lot of personal finance apps. I like to be a guinea pig and try out all these things. So I know what I'm talking about when it comes to what's helpful and what isn't helpful. And the app that I've used the longest has been Monarch Money. And it's because Cheryl and I, my spouse, were able to collaborate together. We can work on our goals together, and our budget and our goals are right next to each other on the app. It is clearly the next generation of personal finance app. So what is it? Monarch is the top rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, because you're a stacker, you'll get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/Benjamins. I love the fact that we get to collaborate. I love the fact that it's customizable. And I also love that it's this ad-free privacy you can trust. They never sell your data to third parties or show you ads. After trying out Monarch myself, I totally get why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, because you're a stacker, you're going to get an extended 30-day free trial to try it out like I try out many different apps. And this one was sticky for me because, well, you'll see when you try out the 30-day free trial. Go to monarchmoney.com/Benjamins. That's monarchmoney.com/Benjamins for your extended 30-day free trial. All right. Lots of good stuff on tap. So let's move.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamins headlines.
And in our headline today from Fortune Magazine, recession shock, Bank of America, latest major institution to deliver a grim warning for the future. Not only is Bank of America talking about this and other publications, we've seen JP Morgan also issuing a grim forecast. And here to dive into what this means in a little bit different way than you might be looking, from Stellar, Lamine Zerat joins us. How are you, man?
I'm doing great, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm jealous. We have you on my dad's shortwave radio, and you're actually enjoying some fine weather in Austin as we talk, and I'm a little jealous, but we won't go into that. Let's go into this. This idea that recession, and JP Morgan says that it's a little bit prescriptive, right? Yeah. That the Federal Reserve has to raise rates. If they have to raise rates, we're kind of forcing the economy into a recession. Would you agree with that, Lamine?
I do. I think there are enough indicators out there today that would suggest that we will be entering a recession.
But you think that this means we really need to protect our credit. Why is that?
Yeah, it's a really interesting topic, and the one that's not currently being covered a whole lot by the media because it is a bit esoteric. And so to answer your question, I guess I'll have to provide a bit of a background on what's been happening for the past 15 years. We've had this unprecedented bull market. The economy has been improving and interest rates have been low. And so people, you know, I'm not talking about investors or bankers, everyday people like you and I, we've been leveraging. We've been taking borrowing money because it's so affordable. In some cases, it's nearly free. And it makes perfect economic sense to borrow money to do things that you need to do, be it, you know, home remodeling, buy a new car, whatever it is, right? Pay off some of the maybe other debt. So ultimately, people have been engaging in these sophisticated restructuring activities, and they are what's known as over-leveraged, meaning that you have a lot of debt. That debt, if it carries low interest, is not that big of an issue. People have been paying it off and taking it out in chunks. But as we enter this recession is not like any other recession. It is driven by high interest. The interest rates will rise, and that leverage is going to become a burden for a lot of folks when they realize that, look, you know, my car payment is now burdensome, right? Because I have to refinance my car or I got to have to get a new car. And suddenly my interest rate is upward of 8%, 10%. And suddenly that becomes real money out of your pocket, right? And with inflation on top of that, where all the other prices are rising and your debt is rising in terms of pricing, that's a problematic position to find yourself in.
You're drawing attention to something that I hadn't considered, Lamine, which is there's really two reasons people refinance. Reason number one is interest rates are low and I can get that interest rate down. But the second one that you're referring to, I think is, and tell me if I'm putting words in your mouth, but it's more of a panic because of the fact that I have this adjustable interest rate. I need to lock in something that's manageable or change the terms of my interest because now things are getting out of hand.
That's correct. And, you know, believe it or not, a lot of folks develop these, I would say, quasi-sustainable ways of constantly refinancing their debt. You know, you run up a credit card and then you get another card and you move the money there. And because you do that, you actually, in the process of doing it, you're building credit and people trust you more. The lenders trust you more and they'll give you more credit. And in a good market, when all things, all the ducks are in a row and everything is lined up nicely, you can continue doing that. But then when you reach a place and time like we are today, where interest rates are rising, that gravy train suddenly ends and you find yourself in a place where you can't borrow more. At least you can't borrow money that's cheaper than you've had already. And that whole scheme kind of comes to a screeching halt. Unfortunately, that's going to happen to a lot of folks.
You built a whole company on helping people with their credit. Tell us a little bit about Stellar. How did Stellar come to be? Yeah. And exactly what does Stellar do to help people with their credit?
Yeah. So Stellar is very much a product of my own personal experiences, both, you know, mistakes that I've made as a young person and also lessons learned while building companies. So Stellar is my third fintech company. I've built two neobanks. Neobanks just means modern digital bank. And when I sold my last company, I thought, I want to take the lessons from building financial products and marry them with these burning desires to build something that I could have used when I was 18, 19, 20, 22. And, you know, Stellar came out of that. And so Stellar is a platform that allows people to build credit through things they already do every day, like pay bills. We help folks consolidate all of their bills, everything from, you know, subscriptions like Netflix and Hulu to your rent. None of those things are accounted for when it comes to credit building. We actually pay those things on your behalf and then pull money out of your account in the back end and therefore create a credit transaction that's then reportable to the bureaus. We are an account on your credit report that's building your credit. And then we also give you a bunch of different tools to then qualify for more credit, which if you think about it, by design, we're sort of set up for an economic downturn as a tool that helps folks to climb out of debt.
Well, and I think about what you're saying. the fact that not paying my utility bill on time can affect my credit negatively, yet it doesn't show up on my positive credit score. It has always, to me, kind of been this weirdness where business has the upper hand on the average person. It can count against me, but it doesn't count for me.
Isn't that crazy? That's the way the system is set up. And so just to give you a quick context and background on the way credit landscape is set up, you have these bureaus, they're agencies. They're basically data companies that collect information and they store the information and they share information. That's TransUnion, that's Experian, that's Equifax. There's another one no one talks about. It's Novus. They do a lot of the same things that the other big three do. And then you have lenders who want to minimize their risk of giving money to someone that's not going to pay them back. And so they go to the agencies and they request data on you. And it's called a credit profile or a credit report. And people who report to those agencies are usually other lenders. And that's what lenders want. They want lenders to tell them, hey, Joe is a good borrower, or Joe is a bad borrower, Lamine's a good borrower, a bad borrower. But in some cases, if you are a landlord or if you are a utility company, you can also report, because reporting actually costs money for companies. Unless you have to report, you usually don't. And so utility companies use that as leverage to scare folks into paying. Instead of reporting all of your data that would cost them some money, they will only report when you're not paying on time. And they use that to as an intimidation tool to ensure that the customers are paying them. But when the customers are paying, they're not rewarding them for that.
Right.
And that's problematic. And that happens way too much, unfortunately.
You know, you talk about making mistakes when you were young. I know that you came to the United States as a refugee. We'll save Lamine's entire story for later. But you did also serve time in the military, in the Marines. And I have to ask you what your time in the military really taught you about running a fintech company. Because I have to imagine running a fintech company, Lamine, running all three of them, that there are days, right? And I got to imagine being a Marine may get you through some of those days.
Absolutely. It's funny. I think learned more about entrepreneurship in the Marine Corps than anywhere else, even more so in a business school. So what did Marine Corps teach me? Discipline, perseverance, resilience. I know those things are cliches. People talk about them and throw those words around, but these are really important concepts. It is really like having enough energy to push you through the day. You know, another thing is leadership. You really can't build a company by yourself, and you have to find people who believe in you and believe in the idea and believe in a mission to follow you along. And Marine Corps really teaches you that. It teaches you how to take care of people, to make sure that they're just as successful as you are, and everyone can focus on the mission together and get it done. And I would say that's probably the biggest takeaway from that experience.
The Marine Corps Book of Strategy, one of my favorite business books, by the way. If people want to know more about Stellar, where do we go?
So you would go to stellarfi.com. It's stellarfi.com. Or you can find us on social media. Usually Get Stellarfi is our handle, but stellarfi.com is probably the best place.
Lamine, thanks so much for helping us with our credit today and really giving us a new view of this recession and kind of the danger of not protecting our credit during it. I really appreciate your time. And I'm jealous of you in that Austin weather, my friend. You got like a 1 week reprieve, I think, before all hell breaks loose down there in Southern Texas.
We're enjoying this reprieve. Thank you.
Big thanks to Lamine for all that. Oh, gee, interesting take. And one that I think would catch a lot of people if they hadn't heard that interview, that, you know, you lose your job, you have no emergency fund, and you haven't really worked on your credit. Good time to get going on your credit today.
Yeah, I mean, you don't necessarily want to use your debt or your credit as an emergency fund, but likely if you need something, it's going to all come crashing down at the exact same time. Like you don't, that's why you get credit card offers in the mail when you don't owe anybody any money. You know, when things are good is when Bank of America's like, would you like some more credit?
Hey,
but when you use it, they're like, whoa, easy cowboy. What do you mean you used all that $10,000 in an afternoon? You know, you're like, I'm good for it. They're like, we're not sure. And if you haven't thought about that in advance, you know, you might be in for some surprises. I think a lot of credit card companies have like universal clauses in their contracts now, where if you do something bad with Visa, MasterCard's going to take the same action, basically. So you can't even hide in that regard. So you have to make sure that your credit is healthy, just like your cash position.
You know, let's talk about the cash position, the emergency fund, cash reserve. A friend of mine, when I was a financial planner, referred to it as an ice cream cone. Said on one side, you got that first scoop inside the cone, which is your cash, liquid cash. And then there might be a second tier cash reserve, which is money that's kind of liquid, but getting a higher rate. And as an example, back in the day when CDs paid something, they would use CDs, but you'd have to forfeit the last few months' interest in some cases, right? You'd have some penalty to break it. But assuming that you didn't need it all at one time, you could either ladder CDs to a high yield savings account, something like that. And then he talked about the scoop, the piece that's above the cone is your credit. So not first tier, not second tier, have both of those tiers, but then also make sure that your credit's in order. And I think I like that analogy a lot because it's not using your credit as a cash reserve, but really is more of a last resort.
Yeah. I mean, the struggle with that is that if you've burned through all your cash and you're also now using credit as the last resort, like what else is there? Not, I mean, you have 30 days. You're going to start making payments in 30 days. Like you better have some sort of plan because Visa will not let you go the 30 days past sending them some money, you know, and if you don't have,
you'll be done.
So pretty stressful.
That ice cream analogy is the worst because I don't know anybody who doesn't think that that part where the ice cream meets the cone is the best part. Like that's the best tasting part of the whole ice cream cone. So what I learned from that is credit is awesome right before you go broke.
If you're going to do it, I mean, I guess at some level, just run it up, right? Like get it over with.
Yeah. Let all the ice cream melt into the cone. So you've got that perfect blend of ice cream and crunch. And oh, it's so good. So credit. Awesome.
If that's the best part, then that's your for anyway. I don't know. Holy cow. Hey, it's time for our TikTok Minute, OG. Time when we dive into the interwebs to find some creator who's either doing something amazing or talking about something hashtag amazing, air quotes, amazing. Of those two choices today, what do we got?
Hashtag amazing.
Today's financial discussion is all about mindset. Remember, money and managing your money well and your career is all about mindset. This is a cooking video that we actually found from Grillin' Good Eats on Facebook. And let's listen.
Next time you're feeling down, remember life is all about perspective. I have a friend who has sex 2 to 3 times a week. He exercises twice a day. He reads 2 books a week. Yet, every day, he complains about how much he hates prison.
It's all about perspective, OG. Doing all kinds of good stuff. Just complains about one thing, one little thing.
I don't have anything to add.
I think it's all mindset.
But it was hashtag amazing.
I think they got it. Yes, he's cooking a ribeye. He's cooking a ribeye.
Oh.
Which makes it...
Ribeyes are nice.
By the way, I sent that to family members, and you can tell they didn't have the sound up because they're like, now I'm hungry. Now, man, that looks great. I'm like, you did not have your sound on.
You didn't listen to it,
yes,
did you?
As I mentioned. All right. Coming up next, Gabe Karp is operating partner at Detroit Venture Partners, a Detroit-based venture capital firm. He's from the same city that I lived in and you too, OG, for a long time. You too, Doug. And also, he before that was executive vice president and general counsel of ePrize, Crane's business, Detroit firm named Gabe as general counsel of the year for the state of Michigan back in 2011. So the guy's doing venture capital now, worked for ePrize and is a successful attorney. We're going to talk to him today about lessons learned about conflict. And attorney that knows something about conflict, not a shock. But as a way of getting there, Doug, I think you might have some trivia for us.
Sure do, Joe. Hey there, stackers. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. I was just upstairs talking to Gabe about all the ways people can have conflicts. And man, is it rough out there. Let's see how it's happening right here in the basement. Let's see... The suggestion box, we'll open it up for the first time. What do we have here? Hey, could Joe please make sure his baby toe stays tucked inside his woven sandals? Uh-huh. Got one more vote for that one right here with this guy. Okay, let me see the next one here. It would be nice to have a patio. Okay, well, it's a basement, people. I mean, you want a patio, you're going to have to pay rent. And that means a job. So no. All right, last one here. Just want to say Doug does a great job. Woohoo! Sweet! Nice! Okay. Of eating all the fruit that Joe's mom gives us because it's about to go bad. Off, Doug? What? Wow! Okay, well, there's some choice words in there. I guess I'll have to think about my behavior. Speaking of terms, what is the term for an increase in the value of an asset or investment above the price you initially paid for it? We'll be back with the answer after I go take a long look in the mirror and think about what I've done.
Hey, Staggers, this is Military Appreciation Month. You know what that means. We are recognizing all of our stackers in the audience. My good friend Nortz, Doug Nordman, who some of you may know, he is a writer in personal finance. He's a guy I'd like to do a shout out to. He is such a giving member of the FIRE community, the Financial Independence Retire Early community. Nortz will do anything for you. It's just, I think some of that comes from his time on a submarine, like my nephew Colin, who's on a submarine right now, and all the work that he did there. Just a super giving member of the community. And you know what? A Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate their members who go above and beyond, not this month, but every month. Navy Federal offers members only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. Here's one of their offers in honor of Military Appreciation Month. Join and get $50 when you open a credit card. Of course, you want to have your whole debt strategy planned out, don't you? Don't just go open a credit card willy-nilly, as mom says. Here's a disclaimer. You got to join and open your membership savings account between May 1st and May 31st. So get on it, stackers. Annual percentage yield is 0.25% for membership savings account. $5 minimum balance to open. Maintain your membership savings account to obtain the bonus. Visit NavyFederal.org for full terms and conditions. That's just one of the things. They offer 24/7 help for their U.S.-based service members. They have resources all over the place. Head to NavyFederal.org for full terms, conditions, and other offers. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
Hey there, stackers. I'm brown banana binge eater and future conflict slayer, Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. According to Harvard Business School Online, might have heard of it, it's a good thing when something you own ripens, unlike those strawberries. But remember, with stocks, you don't lock in those wins until you sell. You're just riding the roller coaster. So what is it called when you have an increase in the value of an asset or investment above the price you initially paid for it? A capital gain. And now, here to help you gain more peace in your life, Gabe Karp.
And coming down the stairs to the basement, it's a Detroit guy. Gabe Karp is here. How are you, man?
I'm great. How are you?
Well, I have
cool to be in this basement.
It's just like any basement in Detroit, isn't it? You know, little dank.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I grew up in basements, so it's like old times for me. Hey, I wanted to talk to you first because I had never heard the thesis before. We need more conflict. And actually, the more you dove in, the more I realized that I think I definitely agree with you that we need more conflict and we need the right type of conflict. But also, you're a long-suffering Detroit Tiger, Lions, Red Wings fan like I am, so I kind of feel bad for you, Gabe.
Talk about conflict. Yeah, that's no shortage of conflict in Detroit sports.
Very conflicted in my love of Detroit sports.
Right.
So I want to begin with this. You kick things off about a company in this boring industry that's growing at a huge rate and that also is known for having a ton of conflict. Can you tell me that story?
Sure. I did a lot of research, part of writing the book. And ended up connecting with a guy who let me come down and shadow him for the day. And this was, in the book, I refer to it as Vulcan Solutions. They're in a somewhat boring industry. They manufacture synthetic parts for medical devices, that sort of thing. When I got there, I walk in and the guy, upon meeting me, he says, "Hey, Gabe Karp, you look like—" So that's what he says to me. And by the way, this guy swore more than anyone I've ever met. And I've hung out with a lot of people. I used to swear a ton too. We're in a meeting and I was kind of following around and he's got two VPs that are kind of going over some monthly progress on some things. He asked a question and one of them said, "Oh, you know, I don't know. I got to check with Stacy about that." And then we just kind of moved on. And then a couple minutes later, he asked another question and the other person said, "Oh, you know what? Stacy's got those numbers." And then it happened a third time. And he said, "I got a question. Who the fuck is Stacy?" They said, "Oh, she's an intern. We just hired her. She was an intern and now she's a full-time employee and she's doing great. She's only a year out of college." And he said, "All right, well, here's the problem. That's the third time in this meeting. One of you said that you have to check with Stacy. So if that happens again, I'm giving her a $10,000 raise. And if it happens after that, I'm giving her another $10,000 raise. And if I'm paying her that much, then what the fuck do I need you for? If she's doing your job, I don't need you." And that seems like a pretty offensive, aggressive thing to say.
Yes.
And I'm kind of just watching this unfold. And the two other people, they just didn't seem bothered by it. Like, they got it. They're like, "Look, this is our bad." And he said, "You guys want to take a break so she can go teach you your job? And then we can come back and have this, finish this meeting later." And they said, "Yeah, this is our bad. We are not as on top of things as we should have been. We've been offloading too much stuff to her and we're going to fix it." And then we went on to several meetings throughout the day. Everything played out very much the same way. When he had a thought, when he was annoyed, when he was bothered by something, it just immediately unleashed. And he swore, but he didn't yell. He wasn't disrespectful. He was just, he's a very colorful talker, you know, and he's very creative with his language. People didn't get offended. In fact, what I found as the day went on is that people really appreciated, there was no guesswork in, did he have a hidden agenda? Was there some unspoken thing? No, if there was a thought, it was out there. So to the extent that there was conflict, it was very direct. And despite the language, it was non-threatening. And it worked both ways. It was, we were walking, this woman came up to him. She was a vice president in some other area. And she basically started, she wasn't yelling at him, but she basically said, "Hey, the other day you went and grabbed a guy off my team and pulled him away from what he was doing to work on something you needed. If you had checked with me first, I would have told you, don't get him because I need him. He's working on something that's very time sensitive. And when you pulled him off that jeopardized me hitting a deadline. It created, you know, you sort of interfered, you kind of undermined me. And bottom line, you made my job harder." And he immediately said, "Well, I guess I really did a good job of, you know, effing that one up." And she said, "Yeah, you did." And then he kind of just stopped for a second. He looked at her and he's like, "Hey, I'm sorry. That was wrong. I should not have done that. I'm going to go apologize to that guy. And I'm going to tell him that if I ever come to him again to pull him off a project, he should feel free to ask me if I've checked with you first and that he shouldn't do anything unless you've cleared it." She said, "Great, thank you." And then as we're walking away, she's like, "Just don't let it ever happen again." And that was the culture, you know, and it just worked.
There was like this give and take back and forth. Like, so the employees could give it back to him. He would give it to them. It wasn't like a boss from on high. When I first read him saying the F-bomb, Gabe, I thought of it as him on high and just screaming at them. But you're saying it's not that at all. He uses very colorful language to describe stuff, but his F-bomb doesn't sound like the threatening F-bomb. I remember I had a boss in college that dropped the F-bomb all the time. I was scared to death of him. And he wielded the F-bomb like a horrible boss would. This was not that at all.
No, I mean, he'd say, "Did you see that effing movie the other night? That was effing awesome." Like, just his F word to total word ratio, highest I've ever seen.
Yeah. Wouldn't go over, by the way. It's funny because I have done that since we moved to Texas just a couple times, this little town, Texarkana. And whenever you say the F-bomb here, it's way different than when I said it in Detroit. Like, saying it here was like, "Whoa, what the," you know, even if it was playfully, it's, "Whoa, we don't do that." But I actually don't want to talk about that. And that's actually not the point of the book. I do want to talk about something you brought up, though, that I was going to bring up later that I found interesting. When he said he was going to apologize, that can be really powerful, Gabe. But you also say later in the book, an apology can also really screw things up.
Yes. And I think what a lot of people get wrong about apologies is that they don't convey a genuine understanding of what it was they did wrong or what damage they caused. And they come off as insincere. It can be a really insincere thing to say to someone, I don't know what I did, but I'm sorry. Or I'm sorry if you interpreted, you know, the wrong way. I'm sorry if you weren't strong enough. I mean, no one says it that way, but that's the implication,
right?
The formula for a good apology, it's pretty simple. Acknowledge what you did wrong. Acknowledge what harm you caused as a result of it and apologize for it. And then, if possible, fix it. That's it.
Yeah. Boom. And I'm completely with you because I can't tell you the number of times when I was reading your words, the number of times I've had an apology where I'm like, well, that just made it worse. Like, I'm like, really? So that's what you're going with, is this apology? And it ends up being kind of what you talk about early on. And let's go back to the beginning of your, because I want to kind of introduce people to this idea that there's two different types of conflict. You've got helpful conflict, but you also have toxic conflict. How do we parse those two? What is the difference between toxic conflict and really helpful conflict?
I would say this, to think about healthy conflict, I would say think about any time in your life where you made really good progress, or you learned a lot, or you experienced real growth, whether it's professionally, personally, whatever it is, a really positive thing. That happened in the midst of conflict. You did something to successfully navigate and manage conflict in a way that allowed for that growth. But for that conflict, you would not have experienced the growth. So that's healthy conflict. That's good. Toxic conflict is harmful. It's hurtful. In organizations where they have cultures of toxic conflict, team engagements are strained. Client relationships are tense. People are worried about their careers. They're focused on concerns over job security as opposed to putting their effort into making clients happy and making the company grow. We talk about these toxins. I've identified some key toxins in the book. And these are things that occur naturally. And in optimal levels, they're great. But either too much or too little of them, they have toxic effects. So they are anger, fear, judgment, and ego. Those four things account for, there are other toxins, but those four account for the overwhelming majority of conflict that we experience. And if you think about the human body, water, the most abundant molecule in our bodies, makes up over 60% of our weight, probably even more than that. And it's great, but not enough water, you get dehydrated. Too much water, you get water poisoning. Same thing with fear. A healthy dose of fear is a good thing. It's going to keep you out of situations that very well could be dangerous to you. But too much fear, you shy away from things. You know, you won't venture out of your comfort zone. Too little fear, you'll just wade into dangerous situations without concern, when you should be concerned, and all the others.
Yeah.
The same way we can go on like a diet cleanse to rid our bodies of toxins, we can do the same for our organizations and our minds. And when we see conflict building up, conflict in and of itself is neither good nor bad, but if it's toxic, it becomes bad and we can detox it. We can identify what those toxins are, see them steering us into a bad path and neutralize them.
I want to walk through some of those, but even before we do that, when you talked about anger, you talk about the way the human brain works. And when you're angry, and I had never known this, the pathway to seeing the other side of an argument is blocked off. Like chemically, I can't even see the other side of the argument you write.
Yeah. It's our survival instinct, the fight or flight reflex, which is promoted. It's triggered by a threat to survival and it manifests in either fear or anger, fight or flight. And yeah, when you think about when our ancestors walked out of a cave and saw a saber-toothed tiger, you know, their survival instinct kicked in and protected them from the threat.
It would still kick in with me now if I saw one, just saying.
Right. Yes. I mean, and, you know, when you are in physically threatening situations, that survival instinct, those responses will save your life, hopefully, and at least give you a shot at saving your life. But when you're in a business interaction or in a meeting, they drive a really poor use of conflict. And one of the things that happens is these stress hormones flood your system, they get into your bloodstream. And neurologically, you have something called an amygdala. It's a couple of glands in the brain. They shut down the neural pathways to that part of your brain where you can think and reason and make judgments and that sort of thing. Because when you are facing a saber-toothed tiger, You don't have time for any of that. You're in survival mode, so you have to rely solely on instinct. Thinking is a very dangerous thing to do in that moment. But when we're outside of that, you really need to think.
I've been there on social media. You know, you just get so angry at somebody on social media and you just want to light them up. Like, I'm not even thinking about their argument. And then the next day I realize, oh, I didn't get their tone. Like, I didn't understand that this was a joke, or I didn't understand what they were talking about, or I didn't get it all. I was so just triggered in the second that I couldn't even back up.
Yeah. I mean, you hear the word triggered a lot. This is like literally a trigger. What's interesting is that maybe they weren't joking. I'm not trying to tell you, though, but maybe the next day you realize, you know what? They really weren't joking because they were being a total jerk. And then you think of the perfect thing that you could have said in the moment. And it's a simple thing. And it's like, well, why couldn't I think of that yesterday when I was in the middle of the argument? Well, the reason is that you didn't have access to that part of your brain. Neurologically, you didn't have it.
Let's dive into a few of the traps that you have in the book, because while you have tons and tons of ways to avoid these traps and to get out of these traps, maybe you could give our listeners just one each for today. And the first one is the bully trap. And we've all been here before, Gabe, where we got this bully, somebody's bullying us around, and you're like, how the hell do I get out of the bully trap?
Sure. So the bully trap is a situation in which bully-like behavior has the unintended consequence to make the person on the other side of the engagement shut down or escalate and fight back. And I want to distinguish that from a situation where, like, a bully on a playground is taking some kid's lunch money. That's bullying, but that's not a bully trap. Like, that's not an unintended consequence. That guy who's a legitimate bully wants to do exactly what he's doing. I think most of us, though, aren't bullies at heart. Unfortunately, we oftentimes can be perceived as a bully, even though that's not what we intend.
What is the bully trap then? Is it more like, Gabe, you're kind of dumb if you don't agree with me? Like, if I say something like that, is that a bully?
Yeah. Well, if you say that and you're the CEO that we were talking about earlier, you probably wouldn't be a bully because that's just how he talks. And I'm not going to perceive that as threatening. But if I feel like you're attacking me and I feel bad as a result of it, and I don't want to continue a conversation with you, like, I want to, my flight instinct kicks in and I just want to run away from you, that's a bully trap, because you don't want that. If you say I'm really dumb, let's just assume you don't want to make me feel bad and make me run away. Instead, you want to point out that maybe I did something that I could have done differently in a much more productive route I could have taken. And you want to bring that to my attention and you want to discuss it with me. So you go about it in somewhat of a clunky way by opening up with me being dumb. That can lead into the bully trap. So there are things that we talk about in the book that you can do to avoid creating that bully trap. And there are also things that I can do on the receiving end to diffuse it. If I can recognize it in the moment, I can speak to you in a way that is firm, confident, yet non-threatening and not escalating. If you said to me, hey, Gabe, that was really dumb what you did, I could say, listen, I realized what I did wasn't the best way to handle something, but, you know, you don't got to call me dumb. I mean, do you really think I'm dumb? And again, lots of different personal style and how you handle that, but that's one of the traps.
I love that, though, because what people can't see, too, I think your nonverbals help there. People that aren't watching the video of this, Gabe smiled and just kind of shrugged his shoulders. And, you know, I think the nonverbal really helps there, too. What about the need to win trap? Let's talk about diffusing this. Talk about social media, Gabe. This is a social media problem right here. I'm going to win an argument, which nobody ever does on social media, by the way.
No, yeah. Social media is the wrong forum to have, you know, long drawn out debates. But yeah, need to win. I mean, many of us have that just competitive edge. And we all have a need to win on some level. But what can lead into a need to win trap is when the need to win a conflict eclipses or overshadows the original reason why you got into the conflict in the first place. I'm a lawyer, so by training, so I think a lawsuit is a great example of that. I used to do commercial litigation, which we call business divorce. And let's say that two parties, a deal goes bad, they can't resolve it, which they both want to resolve, but they can't. So they lawyer up and they end up in court. That now becomes the conflict that they're engaged in. And they realize, well, in order to resolve this conflict, I got to win this lawsuit. So the lawyers just start going out for blood, right? They just start tearing through the other side's lives, ripping everything they love out of their life. You know, it's vicious. And then at some point, because it's worked its course, maybe some people are growing tired of the conflict of the lawsuit and that part of the conflict, and an opportunity opens up to resolve it. For whatever reason, the parties are now willing to concede and compromise in a way they weren't willing to before. If somebody's caught in the need to win trap, that person's going to say, well, no, I realize this settlement offer makes financial sense and it makes good business sense, but I don't want to do it because screw that guy. I want to win. We set out to win this lawsuit. Now it looks like we really are going to win. Let's just keep going. Well, the only reason why you got in the lawsuit in the first place is that you couldn't resolve this business dispute without it.
Yeah.
And now you've got a resolution and you're going to overlook that because the need to win this lawsuit has eclipsed the much larger need.
So frustrating. The diffusion of that, there are so many ways like not to get into this that you go through dealing with it. But just is there a simple way to diffuse that?
Awareness is a big one. The toxin that really drives the need to win trap is ego. Ego's a tough thing, right? I mean, it's a very powerful component to our existence. You know, we need ego. Ego's a healthy thing. You know, ego's my sense of self and my sense of self-worth and my confidence. It's all wrapped up in the ego. And I have found that I've been in debates or arguments with someone and my ego won't let me give in on something, even though I actually don't care about whatever that topic is anymore.
Right.
I would have no problem giving in on that topic before I engaged in the argument. But now that I'm in it, if I give in, I'll feel weak. That's going to hurt my ego. That's going to damage my ego. So one of the ways to diffuse that is to give it a lot of thought. And the next time that you feel like the physiological effects of conflict, the hair on the back of your neck stands up, your breathing becomes rapid and shallow, your heart rate increases. If you can just stop and take just one breath, that's really all it takes. That will pull you out of this instinctive response and intellectual awareness. And then you ask yourself, is my ego driving this conflict? Is the other person's ego driving it? And here's a great negotiating tip. Catering to your own ego is very costly, but catering to someone else's ego is free. And if you find you're dealing with someone whose ego is driving the conflict, then feed that person's ego. It will cost you nothing. Just recognize that that person has a need to feel powerful. So tell them they're powerful and respectfully ask them not to use their power to hurt you. I mean, put that in your own words. You know, you don't want to humiliate somebody. But once I started doing that, I found what an amazingly powerful tool that was. Number one, I became aware of how toxic my own ego could be. You know, there were times when I kind of took a step back and said, you know what? My ego is what is driving this right now. I'm pushing for things and I'm approaching this person in a way so I can try to dominate this conversation and dominate this person. And I can make this person just bend to my will. That's really not in the best interest of whatever thing I'm working on. You know, it's not in the best interest of my company.
Yeah.
It's not in the best interest of my client.
A powerful phrase that you use is labeling the emotion. And I really like that. This idea of, wow, I see you're frustrated, or I feel that I'm frustrated. Like when you start labeling these things, then I think it makes it more, as you just mentioned, makes it easier to intellectually think through it versus that animal instinct of, okay, we had a friend, by the way, who suffered very much from this, the need to win. And my other friends called it, Tony goes into burn it to the ground syndrome. He would just, it didn't matter. He was going to just torch everybody because his ego was involved now. And it was absolutely horrible for everybody around him. And he seriously needs to read your book. You talk about the avoidance trap, the judgment trap. There's others. I need to end it on this because we haven't hit the elephant in the room, dude. What does it mean to not get mad at penguins? What does that mean?
Yeah. So there's a chapter called Don't Get Mad at Penguins Because They Can't Fly. That analogy is a lesson in acceptance. The piece of it is that we should accept people for all of their limitations and not expect them to do things that they're not capable of, even though we may like really, really want them to. And the hard part about that is that it's sometimes hard to see someone's limitations, especially when everything else we know about them suggests that they're not limited. So take the penguin. It's like, what do you mean a penguin can't fly? It's a bird. It's got wings. It's got feathers. and birds with wings and feathers can fly, except that penguins can't. Like, flight is simply beyond their ability. We can choose to get mad at that, or we can accept it. A lot of conflict is the result of the gap between what we expect of somebody and what their actual capabilities are. And when we expect them to do something they're literally not capable of doing, we will be disappointed. We will be frustrated. We will get angry. And by the way, all those emotional responses are choices. And that's a big misconception. People think, well, I can't choose my emotional reactions. They're involuntary. Not true.
Right after I read your book, Cheryl and I were complaining about a close friend. And I realized then, Gabe, we most often, I think universally, do this with our closest friend. Like, you get to know somebody, they're really cool, they're awesome. And then you find the little things about them that drive you freaking nuts, right? And then you pick at that thing. And it was funny, Cheryl and I, my spouse and I, are on a walk and we're talking about this friend of ours. And then I said, you know what? We're getting mad at a penguin. Like, he's never going to change. We have two choices. Either we don't deal with him anymore, like he's not our friend anymore, or we just realize that this is who he is. And all of a sudden it got better. It got totally better. So love.
Yeah. I love hearing that, by the way. That's awesome.
It was, and I read at the beginning of the book, when you started talking about this stuff, you were hearing that a lot. You were giving talks and heard that stuff from quite a few people.
Yeah. Look, it's a tall order to people listening to this or watching this saying, well, how am I going to, the person's like pissing me off so much, you know? And I think one thing to really focus on is that if someone is doing something that they're not capable of changing, then you got to realize they're not making a choice. They're not doing it to make you angry. They probably don't want to be in a conflict with you either. They just don't know how to get out of it. It's beyond their ability. And a great piece of perspective on that is, imagine, let's say someone always speaks to you in a really aggressive, demeaning tone, and you don't like it, you know, but that's just how they talk. Well, imagine if a four-year-old came up to you and spoke to you in the same tone. Would you feel threatened by that four-year-old? Would you get angry at that four-year-old? No, you'd recognize they're 4 years old. They haven't learned how to navigate their emotions. And you know what? There are some 40, 50-year-old people walking around with a four-year-old emotional level. It's just true. It's just a reality.
I love this idea that you can't change them. So just change yourself.
Yeah. The key is that it's a choice. That's it right there. Once you recognize that your emotional reactions to things are your choice, then you can just choose differently.
I can't get over the feeling as I was reading your book that a lot of this, if I'm embodying a lot of what you're talking about, Gabe, somebody that a lot of people know is Gordon Ramsay. And I think they kind of overdo some of the conflict for the show. But you realize at the beginning of the show and at the end that he's arguing with them because he loves them. He wants their restaurant to do well. He's being very direct about what the feedback is. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's times I feel like they kind of explode it in maybe not the healthiest way. As you'll explain in the book. But really, is this kind of, do we all need a little bit more Gordon Ramsay?
I think so. You know, there's a section in the book where I talk about leaders giving feedback to people on their teams that need the feedback. When you have feedback for somebody that is it's gonna sting when they hear it and it's gonna make them feel bad, there are lots of reasons and lots of ways that you're gonna rationalize not giving them the feedback, you know, because you don't wanna be in that uncomfortable situation. You don't wanna feel impolite. You don't wanna hurt someone's feelings. But the reality is, if you have productive feedback for somebody and you withhold it, and you deprive them of the opportunity to grow and be better, that to me is a really cruel thing to do to another person, far meaner than having an uncomfortable conversation. It's like if right before I came on this podcast, I was in the other room and I was talking to my wife and she saw I had food in my teeth and she knew I was coming on your podcast and she didn't tell me, that'd be mean, right? Yeah. Now, I might be a little embarrassed by having food in my teeth, but that would pale in comparison to the embarrassment I would feel if right after I get off your show, I go look in the mirror and I'm like, oh my God, I had that in my teeth the whole time.
Yeah. If both viewers saw that, it would be absolutely right. Horrible. Right. The book is called Don't Get Mad at Penguins and Other Ways to Detox the Conflict in Your Life and Business. I'm assuming, Gabe, it's available everywhere.
Everywhere books are sold.
Man, yep. Thanks so much for hanging out with us in the basement. And I love this idea of healthy conflict. I think I think, frankly, we need a lot more of this. We need some directness. I love those people in my corner, and I'm so glad you came down to be in our corner.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I love the basement. I love what you've done with the place.
This is Daryl from Pennsylvania. When I'm not busy arguing with a four-year-old, I'm stacking Benjamins.
No, Daddy.
Oh, gee, I love this idea of, having Gordon Ramsay-type conversations where you know that everyone loves each other, but let's cut to the chase. Let's cut to exactly what needs to be said to get things rolling.
Well, Gordon Ramsay has a unique way about him. I don't know that you can get away with. I don't know that a lot of people can get away with throwing food and cussing at people in the work environment.
But I think there is value in having somebody that's going to talk to you bluntly about what the real problem is and isn't just going to go, "Oh, Doug, that sure is great." Like, you know what
I
mean?
Well, you have to be conflict proficient for sure. And most people are avoidant of conflict at all costs. So, you know, there's a balance between being respectful and, to your point, being blunt versus, you know, like going, "This is bleeping trash and I'm not, you know, whatever."
I don't know. Sounds like, according to Gabe, that might work too for some people. I don't know, though, if I'm on the receiving...
For some people. Know your audience, I guess.
I was going to say, if I'm on the receiving end of that, I still think I'm not a happy person. I'm like, this dude just said 3 F-bombs at me. Like, I'm not even getting the message because there's so many F-bombs coming my way.
Yeah.
Hey, OG, let's throw out the Haven Lifeline, tackle some of life's most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency, they put what you value first.
Summer vacation and sweet tea.
It is that time, man. But I'm not down with the sweet tea. Give me the unsweet tea. I'm good.
You don't like sweet tea?
No. I even went to college in the South and just haven't been able to do it. Unsweet, please.
Huh.
But you know what, OG? That's why they made buying term life insurance so easy. So you and I could, instead of filling out stupid forms, we could argue about which tea is better. Cause that's really,
I'm not arguing.
I think you are.
Just said, huh?
I think you're misinformed about your tea. Head to stackybenjamins.com/havenlife now. And you'll get a free quote. Their application is simple. It's online. You get an instant coverage decision. Prices are affordable. All policies issued by their parent company, Mass Mutual, more than 160-year-old insurer. Today, we're going to throw out the lifeline to Chris. Say hi, Chris.
Hey, guys. I have some big news that we haven't shared with much people yet, but since the only listeners here are me and that one other person, I thought it'd be safe to ask my question. My wife and I live in Texas and are expecting our first child in January of 2023. And until this point, I have basically ignored any discussions when there's mention of saving for a child's college via 529. Well, now the time has come and I want to be prepared since I have zero knowledge in this area. So, can I open an account in my existing brokerage account, or maybe these types of accounts should be set up elsewhere? Also, what types of plans should I be looking for? Because the one thing that I have heard in the past is that each state has plans with some better than others. Would I be able to use those? And are there any contribution limits? I know it's a lot asking from a guy who spends most of his time in his mom's basement with his two friends, but I figured, what do I have to lose? I would have asked for a tank top since it's so hot in Texas and so I could show off the awesome physique, but now that I'm having a kid, does this mean I'm required to have a dad bod? If that's the case, I might need a shirt a couple sizes larger to fit that belly I'm about to grow along with my wife. Thanks.
Thanks for the question, Chris. First of all, Chris, I think it is in the pack. You don't want to make the other dads look bad. I mean, certainly OG doesn't want to make all his friends look bad if he's got the awesome physique and everybody else is walking the dad bod. I mean, there's camaraderie, right? Camaraderie. I learned that watching Top Gun. Got to be a part of your team. Got to have teamwork.
That's right.
The dad bod team.
Offense, defense, football. It's actually a pretty cool game.
Have you played it?
No, but the concept of it is pretty awesome. Like I get how it requires you to do two things at one time. You have to be on offense and be on defense at the same time.
People wonder what we're talking about. It's a scene from the new movie Top Gun, which we may talk about later. I don't know.
Maverick.
However, OG.
529 plans.
Bring it.
Yes. So a couple of 529 plans starter tips. Every state, pretty sure, I can't verify this completely, but I'm sure of it. Every state has their own 529. That doesn't mean you have to stick with the state's plan. In fact, some states have more than one different types. In Texas, for example, we have a prepaid tuition plan. where you can buy credits. You can say, I think my kid's going to go to UT Austin and here's it costs this much and I'm going to start paying for it today. And you buy these credits in advance. If you don't know where your kid's going to go to school because he or she is not born yet, then you can just put the money in a 529 plan. And Texas has one of those. Lots of states, lots of 529 plans. Some of the favorite ones that we use a lot of times for clients or recommend to clients is the one in Utah. The website's my529.org. Pretty easy to open and set up. A couple of things on 529s. If you want to have it be in your kid's name, they need a social. So you can't start it until your kid's born and has a social security number. That doesn't mean you can't start a 529 plan today. So you can start it today in your own name and then transfer it to your kid later if you want to do that. And what was some of the other questions that he asked? He has brokerage account. So it will be held at a different place, generally speaking. Although, you know, some brokerage companies have 529s. Fidelity, for example, has a 529, but I don't think that you'll find it as attractive as the Utah plan. And it works kind of just like your investment account does. You pick the investment choices. There's some limitations there. And you put money in at whatever frequency you want. Oh, contribution limits, $16,000 a year, but you can pull that forward 5 years in advance. So whatever 16,000 times five is, 32, 64, 16, 80,000, I guess, is today's number. So you can do 80,000 in one lump sum, but then you can't do it for another 5 years. Frankly, if you put 80 grand into 529, probably your kid's college is paid for. So I wouldn't worry about that. So anybody can contribute to it. Mom and dad, grandma, grandpa, aunts and uncles can send checks to the account if you want. It's quite versatile. And the biggest thing is do something now. You know, even if it's $50 a month or $100 a month, that it doesn't seem like a lot. And for the first 10 years, it's not going to really do much of anything, but it will start compounding pretty quickly on the back end of it. And you'll be amazed by how much you're able to squirrel away just by doing a little bit every month. So congratulations on the kiddo, and hope mom and baby are doing good, and good job on thinking about this 18 years in advance. Because as the father of a 15-year-old sophomore, it sneaks up on you pretty quick. Like, oh, I have 36 months left to get ready for college. Okay, good. I should start saving now.
Should probably buy some lottery tickets.
I know. Son, do you know what a job is? Community college, which 529 plans are good for.
Good luck also on building that dad bod. There's a lot of fun, by the way, OG, that he's going to have building that bod. Like, I had a blast
building
mine.
And then you get to like in your mid-40s and you're like, this was a terrible idea.
This was a run, yes.
Oh, that's going to take me three times as long to undo all this.
Undo all what?
The dad bod that I built over 15 years.
Gotcha. You were looking at something. I'm like, I don't know what you're looking at. I'm sorry. Lost the conversation. Hey, big thanks to all of you for hanging out with us. A few quick things. You love talking about this money stuff and want to do deeper dives than we have time for on the show today. We have a great newsletter called The 201. Brooke Miller puts that together. If you already get The 201, we have a reward system for getting your friends The 201 and giving them the financial literacy that they need. StackyBenjamins.com/201 gets you the newsletter. You'll see halfway down every issue, you'll see our great reward program, from stickers to hanging out with OG and I to a special episode of the show that's only for stackers that refer people to The 201 and swag and more. And finally, if you're somebody that's not here for swag, The 201, or to hang out with other money geeks in Des Moines, St. Louis, or Kansas City, you're here because you need better help in your corner. OG and his team are taking clients. So the first step on your road to better financial decisions is at stackingbenjamins.com/OG. That's a link to their calendar. And we'll get you started seeing how your team can interface with their team to think bigger about your goals. All right. Time for us to call it a day. Doug, you got the rest of this, man. What should we have learned today?
Well, Joe, first, listen to Gabe Karp. Conflict? Conflict can be great if you approach it the right way. Don't avoid conflict. Make sure your conflict moves the team forward, and you'll be on your way to a better workplace environment. Second, three square meals? Turns out, life is all about your perspective. But the big lesson? Don't take all of your personal lessons from the suggestion box. Stay strong and hold on to those core beliefs. Stand at the mirror, look yourself in the eye, and tell yourself you're good enough, you're smart enough, and doggone it,
You deserve those strawberries, even if the ones on the bottom are a little furry. Thanks to Gabe Karp for joining us today. His book, Don't Get Mad at the Penguins, is available anywhere you haven't been banned from shopping because of your outbursts. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC, copyright 2022, and is created by Joe Saul-Sehy. Our producer is Karen Repine. The show is written by the brilliant Paulette Perhatch, with help from Joe, me, and Doc G from the Earn and Invest podcast. After you listen to our show, check out the 201 Deep Dives, written by our website manager and blog editor, Brooke Miller. You'll find the 411 on all things money at the 201. Just go to stackingbenjamins.com/201. Once we bottle up all this goodness, we ship it to our engineer, the amazing Steve Stewart. Steve helps the rest of our team sound nearly as good as I do right now. Want to chat with friends about the show later? Mom's friend Gertrude is our social media coordinator and the room mother in our Facebook group called The Basement. So, say hello when you see us posting online. Here's a weird fact. Both she and Tina Eichenberg are never in the same room at the same time. To join all the basement fun with other stackers, type stackingbenjamins.com/basement. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and we'll see you next time back here at the Stacking Benjamin Show. Not only should you not take advice from these dorks, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any financial decisions, speak with a real financial advisor.
You and I went to see the same movie, OG.
And I still have my voice. You were yelling like a teenage schoolgirl at Tom Cruise and his...
I was very afraid. I thought that the...
Svelte muscles.
I thought the bad people were going to get him at the end.
You're like, duck, duck,
quick, there's a missile coming for your plane.
You're like, of course you should play beach volleyball in jeans.
Duh. Was he playing in jeans? They were playing beach. They were playing football this time.
Oh, yeah. The football in jeans. He was in jeans.
He was absolutely in jeans. He was. Oh, I didn't even notice that. Everybody else was in shorts.
Yep. And Tom Cruise.
And Tom Cruise was in jeans. Well, that's
not topless, right? Had to have been topless.
Yes, he was. 100%.
How do you look? He's like 67 years old, no shirt on.
59 and smoking hot.
I got to tell you, they had a thing at the front end, though, thanking people for coming to the theater. Did you see that part, OG? Before the movie started, he looked way older. In the opening, you're like, wow, he's aged. And then they go to the movie and he's been so made up.
He's jacked and tan. He did not miss 1 ounce of baby oil.
So I wonder what movie it is we're talking about, OG. Exactly. What film could you and I have seen the weekend it opened?
I'm going to see it 10 times.
Well, let's listen to a trailer.
...30+ years of service. Combat medals, citations. Only man to shoot down 3 enemy planes in the last 40 years. Yet you can't get a promotion, you won't retire. Despite your best efforts, you refuse to die. You should be at least a 2-star admiral by now. Yet here you are. Captain. and why is that?
It's one of life's mysteries, sir.
It's not one of life's mysteries. He has to be a captain so he can try to save the day again, OG. He can't do that as an admiral. Iceman's the admiral. He's got to talk to Iceman to get the job done. Movie, of course, is Top Gun Maverick, and that voice chiding him is the voice of Ed Harris, who's in a scene at the beginning of the movie explaining that Tom Cruise's character Maverick might be a little bit of a loser when it comes to the way he looks at him. And that's the way, of course, that all of the Navy brass looks at him throughout the movie, especially another character later on, John Hamm, who does a good job of being his commanding officer at Top Gun. So what did you think, man, besides the 52 minutes of previews beforehand? Because holy cow.
It seemed like a considerable amount. Oh. And I will definitely go see Mission Impossible Part 1, but it's not really Part 1. It's Part 71.
Yeah.
But that looked awesome.
It's like Part 71A.
Yes.
Yes.
That's it. Part 71 Alpha. It's probably the greatest movie of all time.
Maverick is this part two is.
Holy cow.
Second, a close second to like, you know, probably some other war movie. It's not the great Apocalypse Now. It's not the greatest movie of all time. It's a freaking awesome movie though.
You thought it was better than the original?
Oh my, 100,000 times better than the original. It's mind-bendingly better than the original. First of all, ask any fighter pilot. I am not one. I'm sure that there's a lot of liberties taken with many, many, many of the scenes, but the action scenes are like 1,000 times better than the first one. And I thought that the storyline was better. Like the storyline in the first one is not really a storyline. It's just,
right.
It's just a bunch of stuff they threw together and went, print it. And then went, oh crap.
Reason to go up in fighter jets.
So this has an interesting, the intro scene, like where he's kind of thumbing his nose at the man early is pretty awesome. Probably also very unbelievable.
But it got me right into the movie.
Nevertheless, pretty cool. And then, there's a lot of the nostalgic things in there. You know, he plays sports outside in his jeans, you know, because why not?
He's out by the car with the girl. They're riding on his motorcycle.
He dusted off his motorcycle.
Wow, they did all of that.
Oh, yeah.
Did they sing in a bar?
There were so many callbacks. They did.
There were some singing in bars going on. A little different, feel for that, though. A lot of, like, little connections from before. I don't know. I had a great time. Had a bowl of popcorn and a couple of cocktails at one of those fancy movie theaters that serves you booze for $20 a throw and... And
spent $100 watching a movie by himself.
No, it was packed.
No, I meant you didn't bring the family. It was just you.
No, my boys went.
At $20 a throw, you spent $100 yourself.
No, my kids were lit. It was crazy.
Kids were lit.
They had so many slushies, candy.
Well, that means he spent $400.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to get to.
Yeah, Doug. No, we went with a whole bunch of flying people, a whole bunch of pilots that I know, and some guy got a whole bunch of tickets.
They have call signals too.
One of the guys brought his fighter pilot helmet from when he was in the service. Like, you know, like the big thing with the mask on.
You don't get to keep those.
I think you do.
Is that a flex or is that nerding out? Like, who wants to wear it after you, Doug?
I'll tell you, there were probably, if there were 100 people, I'm just using ratios here because there were more than 100, but if there's 100 men in the movie theater, 65 of them had goose mustaches and bomber jackets. Everybody was like in character, like with the, like a t-shirt with the, you know, like the Hawaiian print shirt over top of it, like goose.
Are you sure you didn't go to Top Gun Con?
It was awesome. It was really good. We went on Thursday before kind of came out. So
last week I reviewed Doctor Strange and talked about how the movie had no stakes. They had all these actors in it that were wasted. This had a ton of actors you've heard of before, you've seen before. Jennifer Connelly's in it, Miles Teller's in it, just a couple more. And none of these actors are wasted, and there's very high stakes throughout the movie. Like, I was on the edge of my seat from the beginning to the end. I thought it was really, really well done. I was so not sure about this movie, because Hollywood has this way, as you know, OG, of just bringing back old crap. And then, hey, people will buy tickets to this. And who cares if it's really that good? This movie felt like a celebration of the original movie. And they did such a good job. And I was reading yesterday how Val Kilmer, talk about another big name, begged to be in the movie, even though he has no voice anymore. He wanted to be in the movie, and he was in the, he was great. He was, and that felt like it had stakes as well. I enjoyed the hell out of this movie. I thought this was super fun.
Definitely a Reese, 100%. Yeah.
Wow.
Many times over.
I can't remember the last time you guys talked about a movie and I thought, I got to go see that. And now
Go to whatever the fanciest theater that you've got with the Dolby surround sound.
Just do yourself a favor and show up 40 minutes after the listed time. So you miss the 40 minutes of seriously, there were so many trailers. Just come on.
I'll be able to stand in the back. There aren't a lot of theaters where I live, so I may have to wait a year or two before it makes it here.
Oh, for crying out loud. Oh. It's in I guarantee it's in the theater, that the one theater that's nearby you, where however far away it is, it's there.
We're looking that up right now, because you're guaranteeing me I'm going to take that money all day long.
If it's not, I'll buy you the ticket wherever else it is.
Oh, it's getting better.
Grandpa Doug doesn't want to go see a movie in Texarkana.
Here we go. Here we go.
Look, they're showing the original.
Now showing.
Now they're showing Batman with Michael Keaton.
I told you.
It's there.
It's made $180 million in 3 days, man.
Who knew?
It's the best opening weekend box office of a Tom Cruise movie ever.
I have a real dilemma now, because actually my massive Metroplex of three screens, and I think each screen is about the size of my television, I have a choice between Top Gun Maverick, Doctor Strange,
horrible,
which Joe has sold really well, so I'm really conflicted. But here's the real kicker. I might just have to go stay for the whole day, because the third one is Downton Abbey, A New Era.
That's so good. That was so good.
You saw that movie?
I did. It was great. I'll review that.
Top Gun.
In the future. But yes. If you're a fan of Downton Abbey, the new Downton Abbey is like a warm blanket.
Don't muddy the waters.
It's good stuff.
It's a lot of good testosterone going on right here.
I can go to
here.
The 115 Downton Abbey, the 430 Doctor Strange, and then maybe the 7 o'clock.
Just skip the Doctor Strange and go get some dinner and then come back. Yeah.
Show up at 8.